You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Knife Talk, the number one knife-related podcast on this germ-infested planet. We're here, ladies and gentlemen. It's Monday or whatever day. We're here with you. My name is Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. And the Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts is here. We're here every week to, you know, just keep the wheels on the train. You know what I'm saying? Guys, Mareko, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing all right. It's early for me right now, yeah. But I'm okay. I got up extra early so I can get some coffee in me, and it's getting the kids still asleep, so I was trying to figure out something quiet to make, so I made myself a ham and cheese sandwich for breakfast.
Good. Wow.
Yeah, not the greatest breakfast, but it's something, so my brain's working this morning. But otherwise...
How early is it for you?
It's 6 o'clock. I got up at 5, which is Jeff's usual...
I was up this morning at 4:30, and I was at the shop by 6.
Ugh,
jeez. I didn't, you know,
you're
so
wild,
get
man.
Some, well, are I had to get some work done.
Are you still starting your day with watercolors?
I've never started my day with watercolors.
What are you talking about? You used to start your day off early in the morning with watercolors.
Oh, when my daughter was very young. But no, I haven't done that.
I thought you were still doing that like a couple years ago.
I wake up. Who cares? What are we? What a bunch of altar cockers talking about what we do in the morning? I first take a shit, and then we're not doing that today. Come on.
24 hours in the day off. Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I thought that's what this podcast is about.
Right.
Us talking.
Yeah. It is. But, you know, so what's going on, Mareko?
In the shop, I'm still making slow progress on that Loveless replica. I actually was getting it etched in. I was ready to hard glue it up. And the etch was all funky and fucked up on it. And I couldn't, especially along the spine. And I thought it was the different etchings. And so I just kept battling it, like basically all day, a couple days back, or actually on last Monday. And I realized that I didn't get through all the decarb. I could tell. I realized that when I was, or remembered when I was grinding, I was seeing some weird funkiness on the spine in the material, because I could see that, like, where the CPM 154 was and where the ABL is, because the bands of those steels in this pattern are somewhat bold. And so on the spine, I was seeing within one band and one particular steel, I was seeing some weird funkiness. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And now I know it's decarb. And so I got to actually, I've already got the handle scales fit up and everything, like museum fit up to the damn thing. And I have to take it down, not a lot, but just, I got to take it down enough so I get below that decarb material. And so that it etches properly. But then that means I also have to adjust the scales now.
Right.
So hopefully, and the way I'm doing the scales, it's a hidden pin construction. So I have all these like little pockets or holes or let's see, like, I don't know what to call them. But just like, yeah, holes drilled on the back, but they don't go all the way through. What are those called when you don't drill all the way through? I can't remember right now.
Phantom tunnels.
Phantom tunnels. That
really?
Sounds like a weird show you watch.
No.
Anyways, so I got a bunch of those drilled in the back to help hold glue and stuff because it is a hidden pin construction. So to create
Phantom tunnel construction, to give
extra surface area for glue to go into and bite onto to act as a kind of quote unquote additional pins within the handle material from the inside. And I'm hoping that they're not too close to the perimeter of that tang so that as I re-sculpt the handle a little bit, I don't blast through, which would be a bummer. And while it would be a massive bummer, it would be a quick fix. It's just a really nice piece of ironwood that I do not want to fuck up. And so that's where I'm at with that. I got another knife going, another ironwood handle. I'm going to be doing kind of a, what is it? Like an Oliver Goldschmidt inspired inlay in the pommel of the handle and the butt, like at the back of the handle. Just to create some contrast. Cause, I don't know. I've done handles that are just one handle material or especially like natural material, but I feel like you want to jazz it up essentially a little bit. And so I don't want it to just be the ironwood. So I'm going to be putting a contrasting piece of wood in there, probably like a blonde, like Carillion burl or birch burl. But I'll probably actually add a spacer to in at the front of the handle where, like near where it meets the transition to the integral bolster. I'm just trying to figure out ways to make it look nice and not boring, but still do a good job and not spend my fucking whole career building it
on this one knife.
Yeah. So, other than that, I think things are okay. I have a dilemma we can talk about if we get to that point in dilemmas. A friend had a serious issue and with shipping a knife. So
let's get straight to that after that.
Jeff, what's been going on? Craig, you're in Wales. How did the ride wait a second. How did the Disney performance last week?
Oh, yeah.
You said you were going to play. You got roped into playing Disney music for the school, your daughter's school. Tell us all about it.
Absolute chaos. So we decided to take just loads of instruments in. So, like, I got two drum kits, so took them all apart. So each kid had a drum to play, you know, a few old guitars. So every kid had something. Which was great because then they just all bashed the shit out of everything and just made loads of noise for like an hour and a half. I didn't really have to do much.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I sang one song Jesus. and I had my daughter singing along. And that was it. So yeah, it was easy. I just let them take control and it was chaos, but yeah, it was good fun.
What did you play?
I played Let It Go, you know, the Frozen Let It Go, Let It Go, and my daughter sung.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was quite nice. But the rest of the time was just chaos. Kids just banging shit out of everything. But it was good. It was good fun. Good fun. But then we jumped straight in the car, did the journey. It took about 16 hours, the journey over to Wales. Straight to the rain. So we left the sunshine, beautiful sun, and it's rained every day since we've been. It would be near a week now. Every single day it's rained. So we didn't let it sort of deter us. We've been out, we took the kids like out on a boat fishing and we went away for a couple of nights down to West Wales and so on. So yeah, it's been nice. But it's just been wet and cold. It's like going back 3 months in the weather, you know?
Ugh.
Yeah, not too good, not too good. But hey, it is what it is.
When are you heading back?
We think either Sunday or Monday. Not sure. It's a weird one because I need to go back because the car needs to go back because my wife doesn't like doing the drive, especially with the kids on her own, obviously. So I'm driving, but then the following day I fly back to Wales on my own. because I'm in the studio for 2 weeks. So it's a bit of a chaotic month, this one, for us.
Dang. Look at you, the life of a rock and roller.
Yeah. Fishing on boats and catching planes, yeah.
And driving, like for days, 18-hour drives.
Days, yes.
Madness.
So we're doing it again, I say Sunday or Monday, I think, yeah. But then within 24 hours, I'm back again, but on a plane, thankfully. I'm not driving, so yeah.
There you go. Look at
you. That's how it goes.
Look at you. Yeah.
And I'm not bitter at all that my kids caught more fish than me. Not at all.
Oh my god. Yes, you are.
I was furious. So we booked this little fishing trip now, and it's, you know, it's just mackerel fishing off the side of a boat. It's simple, you know, it's pure chance.
That's what you say to your kids?
That's what I keep saying now, yeah. Yeah. I didn't then. Beforehand, it was like, I'm going to get the most fish. I'm going to win. And the kids are like, I'm going to win. So it was a bit of a joke. We get on, and everybody caught a fish apart from me, like in that first half an hour. And I'm sweating now because I'm trying to be, you know, the dutiful dad. This is how you do it. And they're pulling up three or four, you know, per line, these mackerel. And in the end, I got some, but I was sweating for a fair bit, I'll be honest with you.
Did you say to him, it's only luck, you know?
It's only luck.
This is not skill, little
That's
children.
What I was saying afterwards. Yeah, it's just nice chance. Just chance. Yeah.
I could see you like trying to help get the mackerel off the line and be like, oh no, and accidentally drop it back
drop
out
it
into
in
the ocean.
Oh, too bad.
Drop it. It was quite good, actually, because it was the first boat trip of the season of this particular fishing boat. So the guy himself, like the skipper, he was like really excited, and he's like, if we don't catch a fish on this, that's it, that's the season done with. Like, you know, first trip, I think it's a luck thing, you know, superstition thing, if you don't catch on that first trip. But they were just coming in thick and fast, and he was well excited then, and the kids were loving it, and yeah, it was good fun.
It sounds like great time.
Yeah, really good. And it was windy and it was rainy a bit, and it was all, and even the baby came with us, you know, he's only two, and he was loving it, and it was great. Loved it.
Making memories.
Exactly. That's the whole purpose. Yeah. Yeah.
Jeffrey. I was just going to ask real quick. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the DeRoziers, but they have a couple of little kiddos now, and they're out fishing all the time, and it's so fun to watch them doing their thing.
Yeah.
It's cool to see how those kids are growing up.
Amazing. Yeah. Good stuff.
So much fun.
Jeffrey, what's been going on?
It's been a lot of tying up loose ends and getting ready for new projects. We just launched a collaboration knife with Chef Elon Hall, the Little Hammer. So I'm actually, after we record this, I got to run onto a meeting in regards to how we're going to do some things. And we're finishing off some bread knives, waiting for some stencils to come in for this bakery we're kind of excited about, and getting ready to do another collaboration soon, and, you know, just lots of little things here and there.
You're feeling a bit run down, too. You sound it.
Yeah,
rather.
I got there's allergies are killing me. So, like, yeah. I actually can't. I usually wake up in the morning and work out, but I felt like, was recording early too. I got to the shop at 6 and I just started working to kind of like get the ball rolling. So I'm a little bit, yeah, I am a little bit, I think it's allergies. Otherwise, with the exception of, you know, I feel fine, but yeah, we're trying to, you know, look, we're trying to seize the day, as they say, you know. March was just okay, and April's, you know, just okay. And we're shaking the trees. We're shaking the trees to get some leaves. Other than that, you know what I was thinking, I was watching on Instagram, our friend, Matt Gentry, and Matt Gentry, recently had one of these, PayPal scams. These PayPal scams happened to him where a guy got into his DMs and, you know, I think this is one of the reasons why, and I have no idea how it happened or really what happened, but doing business in the DMs is a dirty, dirty place. And I believe that this guy's name is, I don't even know his Instagram handle. It's like Kobe with a lot of zeros or something like that. I guess he ordered a knife, or he wanted to order a knife with Matt. And then he paid Matt. Matt sent the knife, and then the guy filed a grievance with PayPal. PayPal took all the money out of Matt's account and then gave it back to the guy. So what Matt said is this guy's done this a lot. He's done this particular dude, and it reminded me, we talked a couple years ago, Mert Tantz, who had the same thing happen with a guy in Australia, where this dude was, you know, I don't know how it works. I don't know how it works with PayPal, but it's...
Yeah. They signed immediately with the buyer, which I think is a good thing. It's better than doing the other way, but it's flawed, isn't it? You know, because some people will take advantage.
I wanted to bring it up because one of the things is like, it's, you know, we talk about, you know, I don't know if it is because it's in the DMs or not, or because you send them an invoice with PayPal, and then I don't know if that's part of it. I don't know exactly what it takes, but it's funny because on the radio I've been listening to a lot of ads, and do you know who the actress Jennifer Coolidge is?
Yeah,
she was like Stifler's mom in American Pie. So she's doing all these, and she God bless her. I don't know how she's still famous, but at the same time she's got a voice that you just want to, like, you know.
Yeah.
So she's running these ads with this credit card company. And the idea behind the credit card company calls her up because there's some strange charges. And or she'll call a credit card company. There's like pile of ads. And she'll call up and she'll say to the credit card company, I bought this shirt and I don't like it. Or I bought this thing and it's just not for me. And the whole idea is call your credit card company and your credit card company will do a reverse charge or whatever. That's what it meant said to me.
Wow.
Like, one of the ads was she bought like t-shirt cannons and they called her up and said, this is really strange as you bought all these t-shirt cannons. And she's just like, oh yeah, yeah, that's fine. But the other ones are, she called up to say, this particular shirt isn't right for me. And it's creating this weird, strange idea that if you buy something that you don't like, you go to the fucking credit card company. And I don't, and it took me a while to, like,
so that would mean you keep the item then, surely, because you're not taking it back to the store.
No, but I mean, it's instead of calling the company up and saying, I don't like this, I want to return it, you call the credit card company to do something about it. I mean, I might be a little bit not really saying it exactly how it is, but her purchases and what she's dealing with, instead of going to the customer service of the company that she's buying, she's basically telling the audience, oh yeah, you go to the Discover Card customer service and they'll fucking take care of everything. And it was strange to me because I felt as though that this kind of falls upon the idea of not really protecting the company that's using these credit card services that we're paying percentages to.
Yeah,
you know,
when we do
PayPal. Tony wants to fucking every year. In the beginning when we started using PayPal, he says, "Don't use PayPal," or "I don't want to use PayPal. I'm tired of paying them." You know, we pay him a percentage all the time, and we used to make jokes that PayPal owes me a fucking fruit basket at Christmas because it's like we're giving them so much.
Yeah,
fucking money.
They're the worst. They're the worst to deal with because they take
a
larger percentage
has,
the most, and because everybody has it, you use it. But you just can't get hold of them if you need to, you know, and everything is just those, you know, those robot responses, you know, and you get the same thing over and over again. But it's interesting what you said about, you know, taking stuff back, because my wife, and I think a lot of other females that I know, like particularly if they're buying like clothing and things like that, they'll just go out and they'll just buy shitloads. And they're like, oh, if I don't like it, I'll take it straight back. But, you know, they take it back to the store and they deal with the store, you know. But none of my male friends would ever do anything I could do not to take anything back. I'm just like, no.
Well,
if I bought something that's the wrong size, I'm like, say to my wife, will you take this back for me? I hate the idea of it.
But here's the interesting thing, because, you know, my wife gets stuff on Amazon, and she does. We don't have time to go to stores to try shit on. So she'll buy stuff on Amazon, it'll come, and then every so often she'll say, are you going to the post office? Can you drop this off? Now, when she's returning it on Amazon, that's not a – I don't have a problem with it's just not right. I have more of a problem with the concept of when something's not right, don't even bother going back to the store. Go to the credit card company, and then they're going to pull their money. They're going to pull your money back regardless.
Yeah,
you know?
That
was like – it took me a few weeks of listening to this podcast, to this commercial, to say, like, you don't like something, why would you go to the fucking credit card company Why wouldn't you just return it like a normal person, and then you don't like it, didn't work for you, it's fine. Like, yeah. I've had, we talked about this a number of months ago. I had a guy who got it as a gift. He got a knife from someone I didn't know. He said he didn't like it. He wanted to trade it. And I said, yeah, sure, we can trade it. And he says, well, I want a different knife, and I want a refund for the balance. And no, we talked about this. I said to him, well, you know, I wouldn't give you the refund. We would give the recipient of the gift card the refund. And then it turned out.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That, you know, and I said, you know, this sounds so weird, but then it turned out that the gift card person was the mother. So the mother sent, I said, have the person who sent the gift card send me a message, and we'll refund the recipient, the whoever bought the gift card.
Yeah,
it turned out to be his mother. Everything was fine. And you know, that's part of doing business. But this whole concept of just calling the credit card company to a chargeback without any, you know, without getting, you know, PayPal didn't give Matt any opportunities to get anything back. No one on the phone. He couldn't, or he spent hours and hours on the phone with someone. Mm. And this dude, Kobe0001, who the fuck knows, is like, you know, got his money and he's got the knife. So it's the hardest part about this whole idea of, you know, we talk to a lot of people who are in trying to create a business. And it's like, what do we do to circumvent some of these issues?
Yeah. I would, I mean, particularly if it was Instagram and somebody reached out, I wouldn't then just send them like a PayPal invoice. I'd ask them to buy via the website. So there's just that extra layer of security. So if it does come back via PayPal, you can then show, you know, here's the invoice, this is what they bought and all the rest of it. There's just a bit more back end than just they sent me some cash via PayPal, you know?
Is that true?
I mean, that's certainly what I'd do. I'd never just say, yeah, just send it to this PayPal. I'd always want them to put an order through the website. So then there's some sort of history of it. So if there is any sort of complaint with PayPal, at least you've got something rather than just some dude sent me money and he expected me to send me something. You know?
But I mean, it's like some of these guys, they could just say, well, it didn't show up. You know,
not, not true. That, yeah, no, know? True. And that's happened. And yeah, without a doubt. But I think it just does give you that extra layer. I'm not saying it's foolproof, but it does give you that extra layer that if it does come to any sort of dispute with PayPal, you've got something to show them rather than just say, oh, you know, I said I'd do this if he did this. There's no record of that transaction, if you know what I mean.
What do you think, Mareko?
I mean, it's very, I don't know. It feels kind of, I feel like scary is not the right word, but also at the same time, like, you know, this is the only way I make a living. And if somebody were to do that to me, it'd be putting me kind of in a tough spot. And yeah, I don't know how the hell I would have to try to manage that. I would, like Craig's stating, like, I would make sure there's a paper trail and everything as best as I could. And I actually do my invoicing through PayPal. So it's not like they're just randomly sending me money. Like, there's a whole invoice paper trail and everything to keep track of that. So we also have that for our tax records and everything. And yeah, but I don't know. Yeah. Like, how would you even turn around and try to fight that when they don't, there's no discourse. They're just saying, oh, okay, well, the customer's always right, and here's your money back. It's like, what the fuck? Where am I in this conversation as the seller?
Like, and the one who's giving PayPal the money too, their fees.
Yeah, well, and they can't be ignorant to the fact that people could be abusing the system in that way. And it would be, I feel like it'd be silly for them to just go along with whatever without there being a two-way conversation or a three-way conversation between them, the buyer, and the seller.
Here's the funny thing, and I think this kind of like dovetails into what's going on with Instagram. A company like PayPal doesn't have millions of employees to field every fucking problem that, you know, this happens. I mean, that's why when you call like a credit card company, you know, it takes you 20 minutes to have someone. They have to have people, you know, in stock, you know, be able to answer the phone calls because there is customer service. PayPal, I don't think it's the case. I think it's kind of closer to they're using algorithms and they're using kind of, you know, very set computer programs to kind of answer these issues. So there's no like context to what's happening. Personally, I don't do business in the DMs, even though I just bought some wood in the DMs from a guy. But at the same time, it's like,
yeah, you did.
Oh, baby. Oh, God, I got me. You got me, baby. You got me. So, but it's, I try to get people to at least send emails because I can't, you know, figure these things out. But I think that what Craig is saying is true. The problem is there's so many clever scammers in on the internet. I'm going to say 19 years ago, before my daughter was born, I was working at a bakery. And a guy on the website, well, probably, yeah, 19, 20 years ago, he bought, I came in on a Monday morning, somebody bought $10,000 worth of cookies off our website. $10,000 to go to Africa.
I mean, alarm bells are ringing.
Alarm bells are ringing, but at the same time, the money went through. The money went through. So I said, I immediately sent the guy an email saying, well, you know, I appreciate your support. And at the time, this is before anyone, you know, that whole concept of, you know, Nigerian, you know, the Nigerian prince was happening. Yeah. This is 20 years, talking 20 years ago. And I just remember sending the guy an email saying, you know, I don't think these $10,000 worth of cookies are going to be any good by the time they get to Africa. And he immediately wrote me back. He's just send them. Don't worry. It'll be fine. Just send them. And I said, they're going to get broken. There's nothing in them that's going to, I mean, this is like fresh bakery shit. This is not like, they're not going to last Africa. And he goes, just send them. And he was so like insistent that I send him that I called the credit card company and then they said, yeah, this is a stolen credit card company. And then they explained to me that like Indonesia and like Nigeria were like at the 20 years ago, where like the Indonesia area was like one of the top places for these, you know, stolen credit card numbers and people just like getting them and then they're buying all sorts of shit. And the crazy part is like they're still very, very clever people. And then the idea is no longer just like, let's just take a stolen credit card. Now it's just like, I'm going to use my PayPal account. I'm going to pay them. And then as soon as I get the knife, I'm going to have the money withdrawn and there's no recourse. And it is far more, you know, it's far crazier than just like, I got a free credit card and let me call Boston Chicken and get Boston Market Chicken and just get like 100 chickens. You know, it's just like, That happened to me too. Like when I was last time I was at the Center for Middle Arts, all of a sudden I got a call from the credit card company saying, "Were you in California? Did you buy $300 worth of fucking Boston Market chicken?" And I was like, "No and no." And they're like, "All right, we have to get you a new credit card. Somebody bought some fucking chicken with your credit card." Okay. But it sucks because there's no way to kind of like limit this, especially if you're a small business like Mareko was saying, is like one of these chargebacks would be a big problem for him.
Yeah. 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 It's a problem. Definitely is. Yeah. Right. Before we get on with the show, let me tell everybody about Evenheat. They've been with us a long time as a sponsor. We all use Evenheats. If you're looking for a kiln to heat treat those knives, you're going to want an Evenheat because they're the best out there. Head on over to evenheat-kiln.com and just see the range they've got. They've got everything that you could possibly need. evenheat-kiln.com. So I understand we've got some audience feedback this week.
We have extraordinary listener feedback. I think we need to start with, first. If you want to submit to the show, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and DM us your questions, your red flags, your dilemmas, your hot takes, whatever you want. This first one is anonymous. This was a follow-up from last week's anonymous, and we are going to do a quiz. I'm going to quiz you both on this question. Oh. So last week we had a guy who said that he had a newsletter item. He had a newsletter going out, and a guy reached out and said, "I want to buy that knife. Should I do the newsletter raffle, or should I send, you know, buy the knife for, straight out?" Do you remember that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So update from anonymous. A friend gave me exactly the advice Jeff suggested. I got the milk and the cow. I offered the dude a custom with almost same specs and sold the newsletter knife through the newsletter. So basically he's just told the guy, "I can make you whatever you want." Actually, maybe it's funny to reveal that I asked the question because now that I know that I did the right thing. So do you guys want to try to guess who anonymous is?
Oh,
so we know this guy, knife maker, he popular newsletter, did the thing, and now he's ready to be unveiled, and you both know him.
Is it Noah?
Popular newsletters.
Noah who?
Vashon.
No. And it's not another Noah, but I just wanted to get the whole name out. Go ahead, Craig.
Doghouse Forge. I think he does pretty well with a newsletter.
You mean Jonathan Porter?
No.
No. Yes, I'm going to give you guys one more guess. Because I mean, you guys weren't even close. So.
Was it you?
No, why would I fucking write a fucking listener feedback to anonymous to myself
before?
Wouldn't I just bring it up in a regular conversation? Why would I write a fucking?
We're that desperate for content.
I mean, I gotta like come up with a new character to fucking to change it up? No, why would I
God
do
free.
It? Fetter knives. Yeah. No, fucking not me. Go ahead, both of you. One more guess. So far, no good. Go ahead. Mareko, give me a real guess.
I thought I was giving you... Okay.
I don't know. Me being me is not a real...
Somebody that does a newsletter, huh? God damn it.
It's Toma. It's Toma, isn't it?
No.
No. Okay.
Is it the Kentucky Stooge?
Jared Thatcher? No, he don't make knives anymore. He's breeding dogs.
What are you
dogs.
Talking about? I just got
I'm
a
just
newsletter
kidding.
From him like last
I'm kidding.
Month.
He's like obsessed with dog breeding. Never mind. It's Ben Camone. Ben Camone is anonymous. He did the right thing. That's why he wants to reveal his face. So the next one comes from Simple Works. "Hey, guys, you got me intrigued with your conversation on sentimentality. So here's how I see things. Sentimentality to me means personal attachment. When for whatever reason your work feels like it's a part of you. So in order to keep that from getting in the business part of the craft, I think one has to develop the mindset that this tool is not theirs. In all parts of the process, it's owned by another person." Okay, so when he says the mindset of that this tool is not your own, it's going to whoever, somebody else. "This makes the inevitability of one day leaving the shop easier to handle. Love and kisses." So we were having a nice conversation about sentimentality, and I'll just let you know that this week I lost a sale because of sentimentality. Lost a sale. And this
you
is
did.
Not a... I did.
Whoa.
Guys, I mean, it's not the end of the world. Trust me. The guy sends me a message, well, sends us a message, and I want to rehandle something, and they had specific colors in mind, and they were going to send me their favorite, whatever it was. And then they said, I want you to do it with this color, this color, this color, and I want you to put your logo on it. So I found the colors. I figured out how to do it, send the message back, and I said, I can do these colors. I can do this kind of thing, no problem, but I'm not going to put my logo on it because I didn't make it. And I don't put any kind of rehab cleavers we do, the rehandled spatulas we do, I don't put my logo on it because I didn't make it. So it's like, if I'm just rehandling something, I mean, I feel kind of shitty. I feel kind of like it's kind of whack to just put my logo on it, you know, things that I didn't make. So like the spatulas, the cleavers. Yeah, it's just fucking weird. And, you know, I just don't feel like it's appropriate. So the guy wrote me back and he said, well, I won't buy anything unless your name is on it. I'm like, okay, well, it's nice to know you. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, I can't just start slapping my name on everything. I'm not Jimmy DiResta, for Christ's sakes. I mean, I'm going to fucking spray paint and put my fucking stencil up and put my name on everything. It's like, Jesus H. Christ. So I lost the sale because it was just like, I have a little bit of pride. Not saying that Jimmy doesn't have any pride.
Yeah, you did the right thing.
I love Jimmy. Jimmy's my guy. He's my guy. I mean, my motherfucker puts his name on everything. I mean, Jesus Christ. If you got a back, he could put the stencil up on your back and he'll spray paint his name on your back. Ain't nothing he won't put his name on, his tools, everything.
Yeah. Well, you know why, don't you? Because his videos are being ripped off everywhere and everybody else is posting them. So at least if he puts his name on everything, it still appears in the video, even if other people are posting it. I think that's the reason.
You know, he's figured it out. But I mean, I try to put my version of a watermark on all my reels and stuff like that. But I can't put my name on everything.
Yeah.
So you guys want to touch upon sentimentality or anything?
No, but I think you did the right thing. I think, if you're just rehandling stuff, why would you put your
name on
it?
I mean, we're not talking about, like, you know, life-changing money here. It was just the weirdest flex was that and from what Allison told me, he was a bit of what we refer to as a pill. So someone who was just like, I mean, it's just like nonstop, especially he had different variations on the options that I could do. And when I do like kind of color lab stuff, it's you're kind of like, expected to leave me alone. Like, you can give me colors and shit that you like, but don't fucking tell me everything. I mean, yeah, I'm not paint by numbers. I ain't a caricature artist, you know, where I'm doing exactly what you tell me to do. The next one comes from, I'm so happy. I totally forgot about this. This is the first time on this podcast that we're getting a real complaint where you two are in trouble and I'm not in trouble.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You two are in deep shit and I am fucking scot-free. I'm thrilled.
Whatever it was, it was Mareko.
No. It was the both of you motherfuckers and I'm thrilled. This comes from the Blade Maker. And get ready, both of you, prepare your apologies because you both have to apologize. Both of you. Hello, this isn't a question but more of a fuck me moment. I was driving and had the podcast on and my mom was in the passenger seat, delved deep into her phone texting. The guys, and I don't know if you guys remember, but last week we had a name and it was Nick Alpin. And you thought it was a different name. Do you remember what you thought it was?
No, I don't remember. No.
Mareko?
I can't remember.
You said Neek.
Oh, right.
You guys said Neek, all right? Blade Maker, that wasn't me. You guys suddenly started repeating the word neek. In Arabic, neek literally means fuck in the literal sense of having sex.
Oh, wow, okay.
Now, my mom's English isn't great. So usually she isn't tuned into the podcast with me. But when she heard neek, I said shit. I got the glare of death. I got the glare of death from her, with her reading glasses perched on the bridge of her nose.
Oh, perfect.
I tried explaining that this was a knife-related podcast, et cetera, et cetera. But she was like, what the fuck are you guys listening to? And who are these poorly mannered gentlemen you're listening to?
Anyways, well, it's a good job she doesn't speak English, because, you know, Neek would be that wouldn't be the biggest problem, would it? Let's face it.
Yeah. Anyways, keep up the great work and Neek them all. And then I said, that sucks. And he goes, yeah, she hates you guys now and still doesn't think it's a knife-related podcast. So Nate, the Blade Maker's mom, go ahead. Apologize to her, guys.
I'm not sorry.
Oh, shit. You Ooh. Should be sorry.
In fact,
you should
I just
be
blocked
sorry.
Him on Instagram.
Oh, no, you did not.
Yeah, sorry, Fahad. You're fucked. Bye.
Did you really block him?
No.
Why don't you apologize to his mom?
I'm not fucking apologizing for something I didn't know I was saying, especially when I was speaking or attempting to speak English.
Okay. So you were okay. That's fair. That's fair. Craig, are you prepared to apologize?
I'll fight for every listener. So if she promises to listen again next week, I really do apologize. So I'm very sorry, Mrs. Mother Blademaker. And I won't do it again.
So you heard that? The Blade Maker, they apologize. So here's the chance. Now I want you to turn it on for your mom. I want you to make sure she's sitting next to you in the car right now, and we're apologizing to you. This is the Blade Maker. Mom, we're apologizing. They're apologizing.
I
didn't say anything, so I don't apologize, but I'm going to tell you this, madam. Your son is definitely listening to worse things than this. Let's face it. Yeah. Yeah, boy, listen to some Neek. You know what I'm saying? Hey, boy, got some Neek on the phone. He's making it happen. So, Mom, you're right. You should be worried about what your son's listening to.
Tell him to wind his Neek in.
Wind that Neek in, baby. Come on. I'm so happy. He wrote that so well, too.
Brilliant.
We have more if you want to do this. You want to do something else, whatever you want.
Let's do a couple more. But first of all, let me tell everybody about Combat Abrasives. We all use abrasives on a daily day. You know what I'm talking about.
We use the Neek out of it.
We use the Neek out of our abrasives. And you should be going to combatabrasives.com to buy those abrasives. We can get you 15% off as well by using KnifeTalk15 at combatabrasives.com. And they've got every possible grit you could think of. Lots of manufacturers that they sell now as well. And do yourself a favor. You're making a big saving. So try something new. Just slip on a belt in. Something that you haven't tried before. It may change the way you work. So go to combatabrasives.com and remember to use KnifeTalk15 for 15% off.
And it may change the way you neek.
May well do.
You know, I mean, you never know. We figure something out. You know,
exactly.
Make that shit frictionless. You know what I'm saying? I'm with you. So we have a Magna Carta one that I think that we might as well. I'm going to start. You know, I tell people don't write the Magna Carta because it's like sometimes sometimes there's too much side talk and it's kind of hard to read.
Yeah.
But this one was from Jacob Stout. Remember last week we had a guy who said that he started working for a company and they bought another knife company out. Mm. And then the guy who sold his knife company to his boss left and he's kind of high and dry.
He was left in the lurch, yes. Yeah.
Recker, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
All right. So this is Jacob Stout sending more information.
The saga continues.
The Magna Carta continues. He sent me the Magna Carta, but I'm with him and I'm going to read it anyway. But with that said, guys, peace and love. Edit yourself, cut out the side talk. So I says this, and he says, don't worry and all that stuff. Hey, fellas, this is Jacob Stout. Hey, fellas, thanks for the response for my question. I think my description of the situation may be unfair because you guys seem to think I got fucked over or neeked over. But I don't see it that way. I was trying to avoid giving you guys the Magna Carta. Well, here it is. But Craig asked for more details, so here it goes. I'll give you the name. I don't want to write the guys. He want to give the name. We're not doing that. The knives are relatively simple, and the business model seems to be wholesale. My boss says the knife maker used to make 100 knives a day, and from what I understand, the knife maker went blind and lost a foot or something. So, I mean,
is that related?
I don't know, but I mean, you know what? He lost a foot or something. It's like, I mean, you don't know. I mean, that's a fucking
sounds
big
like a,
thing.
Isn't that an issue with diabetes?
That's a four. That's a, one of the four main appendages. I
mean, you five. One of five.
One of five for you. For Craig is one of five. Yeah. So even if I did have access to him, I don't know how much help he'd be. Mareko made a comment about how the first few knives are going to be terrible, and they were. But I've been at it for about 2 months now, and I probably made close to 800 knives.
Holy Jesus
Christ. Like I said, the knives are pretty simple. Laser cut 1095, then I'm rough grinding, quenching, and tempering, and finish grinding. My belt grinder is so old. I kill for one of those broadbacks. Well, that was a, I mean, that was a big, I mean, shell up. Make 800 knives, pony up, my boy. Yeah. Then the handles are just hard wood and brass pins without any real sculpting to them. So as far as the boss is nothing, he has been nothing but amazing. Super understanding, super willing to buy anything I need. Really, except a broadback.
Yeah, no shit. Get a fucking broadback.
What are you doing, motherfucker? You got 800, and you get the broadback, you make 1600. Come on, what are you doing?
Make sure to tell them about the promo code.
We're going to get into that when this is all done. he's been encouraging. He's more like an art patron than a boss. I make my own hours, and at the end of the week, I sell him as much or as little as I want. The guy mentions tarnishing the knife maker's legacy, and we're trying to avoid that. Currently, I'm putting a maker's mark on the knives, but once my boss decides that they're acceptable quality, I'll start putting on the other knife maker's maker's mark with a slight modification, distinguishing them from the originals. I'll get a raise. So I mean, it sounds like he's figured it out.
Well, if he's doing 5 days a week, he's doing 20 knives a day. Wowzers.
I mean, I don't know how. I mean, if it's pretty, I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like there's a, you know. I think the idea of doing production, there are different. I think we all kind of witness and view how people work through the lens of their own experience. And a lot, like something that, you know, maybe some.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You just can't, like, a perfect example is if we make 10 knives here. I mean, there is me and David here, and we are, you know, kind of working as a team. Like, one will be working on one thing, the other people working on the other thing, and we'll have a goal. When you look through the lens of, oh, I'm going to be hand sanding for 6 hours, then you're just like, you can't kind of get past what other people are doing. You see it through the lens of your own experience. So, like, he making 800 knives, like, obviously, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I don't know how he do that with in our situation. Maybe he got something different.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about it at all? Or?
No. I mean, well, if he's making it happen, I mean, good on you. If you've been doing it for, what, 2 months now, you said? That's a hell of a sort of an apprenticeship, isn't it? You know, to go from zero to that. And I bet you've learned lots of tricks along the way that could probably help out a lot of other people. But I just think, wowzers, that is crazy. And it does seem strange about saying going on to eventually he'll add the original maker's mark back in.
With a modification. I like
with
that.
A modification. Yeah, it's that is a bit weird, though, I think. It's Then again, it may not be the maker's name. It may just be like the brand name, which obviously wouldn't be an issue. But yeah, if it was the maker's name, I think that could be a little bit strange. But you're making it happen. Good on you. I mean, yeah.
There are a lot of knife makers who making the bevel is almost like it's hardly anything. If you have a jig on and you're not doing like you're doing like that Scandi grind that a lot of guys do. That might be the least amount of work on the whole project. I mean, no offense. I mean, that might be based on the kind of knife it is. So if you got a jig on, yeah. It takes you like, if it takes you like 5 minutes to put the edge on, I mean, that's pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
And then.
So if he had a broadback, obviously he could use the all the attachments to get everything done quickly. So you need to flatten everything, and once it's been laser cut, and you could then obviously put your, you know, use your table rest and jigs to do your grinding. And we can save you money, I believe, with that, can't we, Jeff?
Yes, we go to broadbackironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for all the attachments, for all the grinders, put them together, put them, take them apart, get the Mareko Platin, get, you know, the surface belt grinder attachment, or get all that stuff. Definitely go to broadbackironworks.com. There are different options too. You can put it together yourself. They'll assemble it for you. You can paint it. They'll paint it. It's definitely worth it. And this motherfucker, you got to, Jacob, you got to tell your boss, get yourself a Broadback, stop playing. And that's how I would say it.
At
boss,
least one. At least one.
At least
get
one.
Various setup in different ways. If you're doing that many knives... Get each station set up for a particular process, yeah.
I'm speaking of which, and this might end up being an interesting conversation, once in a while I'll get a guy saying, well, because we have four grinders here, and I know you're going to do the ooh. The thing is like, when I was in a metal shop, we would have four right-angle grinders. One grinder would have a flap disc. One would have a regular stain disc. One would have a rock. One would have a disc grinder. And maybe their fifth one would have a wire wheel. Because changing them out is such a fucking pain in the ass. If you have one of each, you're able to kind of work faster, and then there's not as much cleanup. So on all the Broadbacks, we have one with a slap belt, one with a slack belt, one with a platen. I just put on one of the Bill Benke radius platens to do a particular grind. We have one with a contact wheel. So you're able to kind of walk down the line, and what happens is you're able to be a little bit more efficient with your time and energy and the tools that you have. So I think that one guy wrote me, he's like, well, if I had that many grinders, I could be... You hear that shit, and it's like, without the experience of knowing why you would have all five with different attachments, you really wouldn't be able to do much.
I mean, it's called streamlining, isn't it?
I don't know what it's called, but it's like, you know, I really feel as though, and this is one of the biggest issues I have, not the biggest issue, I don't give a fuck, but honestly, it's like the expectations of people understanding exactly what needs to be done, and experience is underrated, because people watch all these YouTube videos and they see how people do it. Honor Kaglar says to me all the time, he's like, people say, you know, if I had that mill, I could do that. And it's just like, yeah, but you don't have the experience that I do. You don't know how to do it, you know? And I feel as though that there's this real strange mindset with makers today thinking that they have automatic access to experience. But you wouldn't know unless you kind of have the experience.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good answer. So, I mean, if we can keep going this. We can do questions. I got one more from Josh Scott. Let's finish off with Josh Scott. Listener feedback regarding the Instagram crap. It's happening across the board. Not necessarily flagging of posts, but reach and engagement are in the gutter. I've personally talked to 6 different accounts, all who have 50,000 followers or more, 6 communities outside the knife world, and they all said the same thing. This isn't a solution, but it should shed some light. The people I talk to are in the custom motorcycle world, the handmade hats, handmade guitars, custom clothing, and even a female hairstyle account. I'm listening to the Work For a Podcast right now, talking about the views, the viral, about views, virality, and all that. None of that matters unless it equates to new followers or money in the pocket as a business. I've had reach beyond my followers, and it doesn't equate to new followers, and it's been like that for more than a year. So I'm getting a lot more reach, and a lot of it's because I'm not waiting for Instagram to help me. I'm doing collaborations with other people. People are sharing my shit, and then that's one of the reasons why I'm getting more new follower views, is because it's being shared by other people, and I end up gaining by that.
Yeah, the collaborations thing is good on Instagram too, actually, rather than tagging somebody. So let's say you're collaborating on work. If you were to collaborate with them on Instagram, what happens then? It goes in both of your feeds. So you get the combined likes from both feeds, the combined comments from both feeds, and shares, obviously. So that's a really nice way of doing it, rather than, you know, just... I've done some work with at Jeff Fader, for example. You know, that wouldn't then go in his feed as well, so you wouldn't double up on your views. But actually collaborating with somebody on Instagram definitely does that. We've been doing that a lot with the band as well. So when we, you know, we've worked with, you know, a producer or a certain studio, it automatically goes on their feed, so that, you know, you get their fans given the likes and the rest of it. So, mm-hmm. If you are working with somebody on a knife, you know, mention it to them. Don't just do it. Actually, they need to accept it anyway. So they'd get a message saying they'd like to collaborate on this post with you. But they, I find that to be really, really effective.
I had the funniest one happen to me last night where, you know, I do these ad reads and sometimes I just kind of fuck around just because it's fun. And a lot of the sponsors like it, like a Baker Forge and Tool. So they got this fucking etching called Gator Piss. And it's hilarious because it's like, how do you do an ad read, a serious ad read for Gator Piss without making a joke about it? So my slug line has been, Gator is short for alligator and piss is short for urine. They've made a fucking giant picture of that quote and saying, this is our new slug line. And they tagged me in it to be a collaborator for full blast. I'm like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. I'll collaborate with you. And it's funny because it's like, it's hilarious. And Coy wrote me a message. You don't feel like you have to collaborate. I'm like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's funny. But it's like, you know, it's the most hilarious thing I've ever had to collaborate on is like a picture with a quote that I made. It was ridiculous. Gator piss. Gator is short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. It's hilarious.
I think to kind of add to what Craig's saying is just, yeah, building content, creating content of some sort that is shareable outside of your account. And also, I guess, also what Jeff's saying as well. It's just like, if you are only building content that either appeals just to knife makers or people that already follow you, you're going to kind of still be stuck. But if you can collaborate in different ways, or even just like make meaningful comments or sharing other account stuff, like other accounts outside of knife making are always looking for easy content to share out, especially through stories. And a lot of people are watching stories. And so if you make a post about something cool you see from another account, whether it's a food account or a tattoo artist or whatever, it's an opportunity for them to turn around and be like, they'll see the tag, usually the mention at least in their notifications, and they'll look at it maybe, and then they might share it out. And that's an opportunity potentially to create more visibility for you outside of your account. But I think it's hard though, because so many of us are used to, like we've talked about, like the last few years has been really easy through Instagram to make sales, to get visibility, and all of a sudden it's really fucking hard. And now we got to think about how to do that. And that comes to being creative and making interesting content like Jeff's making, and doing work outside of knife making like Craig's doing to create more visibility for yourself, not just through your knives, but through something interesting, entertaining, something shareable.
And we have to remember that business just in Instagram is a huge mistake.
Yeah, for sure.
We just signed a deal with a PR company after a year. Oh. And we got 3 months. We're going to be dealing with them 3 months to help us get into kind of more brick and mortar media. And it's like, I don't need help. We don't need help with Instagram, but I certainly don't want to. And trust me, this was not, I mean, I'm for it and I'm excited and they're very nice. And but it's a big investment. And the investment is to kind of, how do we get outside of this social media? Because it's just like, it ain't enough. And we're doing everything we can. And part of being in business is also not putting all your eggs in one basket, because I mean, we're here to be in here in the long run. And I think that I kind of like monitor the Knife Talk Instagram posts every day. It never fails. There'll be someone who screen capped that picture saying, you know, you've been, you know, we can't recommend you to whatchamacallit. And then a knife maker will put the middle finger emoji up and then they'll throw themselves around and curse. And I spent all this time with this goddamn social media. And it's like, this ain't the way, man. This ain't the way. You got to figure out other things, because you cannot. And what Tomer Botner told me last year was, we know what we need to know. What we know is you cannot count on Meta. You cannot count on Meta to be there for you. I just got a message from Meta saying, hey, we've been noticing you're doing a lot of work. Maybe you should consider boosting your posts. And I looked at I clicked on the thing. The number one, that my orange sticker, they can't recommend me, still there. Like I peel every time it's open to peel. They wrote, yeah, $5 a day, and this is how many views you're going to get. I'm just like, you know, fuck you. I'm not paying you more. I'm not paying you more for this. I'm not doing that. You get rid of my shit and help me out here. I'm doing content for you, motherfuckers.
Well, and I'm curious, because are you still doing the verified?
Sure am.
So how do you feel? You won't pay for boosting, but how do you feel about the verified? Do you still feel like that benefits you?
It has.
If you're having a hard time getting visibility.
It has. Outside of your account. Given me a little bit of like, it's when I've been connecting with other, when in terms of connecting with people and collaborating, I'm taken seriously. I'm not taken as like some fucking goofball in your DMs, that's for sure. Like, I've kind of touched base with, now I can think of at least off the top of my head, 5 guys that really like, wow, this fucking dude is writing back to me. And part of that is because, you know, that verified sticker, and, you know, I got 30,000 followers, it means something. So they look, when you see that blare, I'm not going to debate people in regards to whether it's worth it or not. I know a lot of people are just like, we should stop doing the verified tick. I'm like, go ahead. It's one less fucking guy I got to deal with. Fine by me. I think that this is the problem. And the funny thing is, I said this on, I don't know where I said this, but I'm probably on when I was on with Brian and all those guys. All you knife makers who are just like, I'm leaving social media, go. You're helping me. I don't mean to say it, but I mean, you ain't hurting me. By you, half of you guys walking ain't gonna fuck. It's gonna be better for us in the long run anyway. So go.
Well, and like I was saying, you were saying, like, trying to find other ways, like you guys are doing, like, this advertising budget and stuff. I just think that
we're not doing an advertising budget.
Well,
we're
that's what the PR firm is, isn't it? You're not doing that for
free.
Well,
it's not an advertising budget. They're doing, it's not an advertising budget, but I understand what you're saying.
Sorry. Marketing, it's okay. Branding, it's okay. Advertising, it's whatever you want to call it.
But anyway, I got you.
If you don't have the money to pay for that, I'm not in the position to do that myself. So I got to start posting more consistently, which I don't fucking do. But two, I got to be more creative about how I'm posting so that it's something, again, I feel like I'm just repeating myself, but it's just like people are, I see all those complaints too. I'm like, you got to fucking get creative now. You can't just rest on your laurels. You got to actually start being creative outside of your knife making to continue or try to continue to be successful as a business.
But here's the funny thing, and I'm this is not about you. This is about just the perception in regards to all this. Mm-hmm. I see guys buying Ann Yangs left and right. I see guys buying new tools.
Sure?
People are buying. I just got my new laser. I got my new laser engraver. I got my new plasma table. I got my new tool. People buy tools, like, and it's like this strange, I don't know if it's a dude thing. I don't know if it's like the whatever it is.
It's a fetish.
But it's like, but however, it's like, I don't, the last tool I bought, I think I got another Tormek a year ago. And I don't spend money on stuff I don't really need. Like, I was looking at lasers and stuff like that, and oh boy, you mention you're interested in a laser. Everybody's got a laser, and everyone's spending thousands of dollars on all this equipment and stuff like that. I invest in people, I invest in the people who work for me, and I invest in opportunities. I don't need a power hammer right now.
Sure.
You know, so my investments are far different than other people's, and it's funny because people seem to think that, like, there's a lot of misconceptions in regards to this business. Like, number one is people seem to think I have an investor. Like, there's people saying, well, if I had an investor like you, I don't have an investor. Nothing wrong with an investor.
That's
nothing
a
wrong with an investor. Well, but because I talk about my business partner. Tony has not put a nickel into Fader Knives, and I didn't want him to. He's a managing partner. He helps me with the managing part. He gets a salary and stuff like that. But there's only one person who's ever donated money, or not donated, invested money in this company, my sister. She helped me buy a tire hammer a number of years ago, and I paid her back. So it's very strange how we see how our expenses are in regards to all this. I mean, me deciding to invest in 3 months with this, you know, but this public relations firm isn't much different than deciding to buy a laser printer or something like that.
Super fair point.
Investing in the business, yeah.
I'm investing in the business in other things than, you know, just, you know, buying something snappy.
Well, and it's just like, to add to that point, it's like if people are struggling with visibility, look at the way you're spending money outside of, not even just in your shop, just out in your life in general. Are there a few things you can cut back on for a few months that you can turn around and translate into helping to create better visibility through branding and marketing and advertising? You probably could. You could probably a lot of people could probably come up with a few hundred dollars just in a few months.
I get messages from Chris Zeppieri sends me messages. He's on Facebook Marketplace. I don't know how he doesn't sleep. I don't know how he spends his day. He's on Facebook Marketplace all the time. He says, there's a guy selling an anvil next to you. It's $700. And I thought to myself, I don't need another anvil. You know, that's not what I don't need that. You know, or something comes up and it's like, this would be really great for your shop. Well, I don't need it. Like a chest of drawers for $1,700. And he's just like, well, you know, that would be really good. And I was like, I don't really need it. He's like, yeah, but it's such a good deal. And I'm like, I don't really need it. I need to spend money on the things that I need, not the things that I want. So, I mean, I'm in a very different place. And this also comes from 20 years of collecting tools, of 20 years of buying stuff when I need them. I mean, right now I need a new drill press because those little tabletop guys, the stopper, the stopper to the depth stopper, just vibrates up and it's not accurate. So I need to, at some point I need to get a new stand-up drill press. Now I know I need it, but I'm not going to run down to the Rolls Royce of drill presses at this moment because, you know, I know what I need to spend my money on. Yeah. I don't know why I'm down this road. Very congested.
I think a lot of us got into this because it was a hobby and something that we really loved doing. And then I think along comes a new shiny toy. And it's not necessarily making your output or your production any quicker or better. But it's just something that you could maybe enjoy using. Because that's why a lot of us started doing this, because we enjoyed doing it. So when something comes along and it's like, oh, it's a new toy, and you know, see it as a toy as opposed to as it making production better, a lot of people will still try. And I'm very, very guilty of that myself, you know.
But with shop tools and stuff like that, there's nothing wrong. When I say this, I'm not against when you talk, it doesn't mean good or bad. It's just saying. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's this strange flex of all the, I bought this, I bought that, I bought this, I bought that. And we have our sponsors make great stuff with great value, and they're great customer service, and they're all very things with that will make you in your shop efficient. The craziest part is I feel as though, and I talk about this a lot with Pat Quinn, is there is this covering of experience and technique with buying something. You know, as this thing will... this new hammer or this new anvil or this new, you know, power hammer will immediately propel me into, you know, it'll bypass all of experience.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I'm going to be like I'm going to be knocking it out left and right just because I have this tool.
Well, it's mistaken conception, right? Like you're saying,
yep, super.
You think, oh, if I just had this tool, I'm going to be so much better. But the thing is, unless you have the skills and the experience and the knowledge and understanding to run, even just the tabletop mill, like there's going to be a learning curve and you're not going to be fucking banging them out right away. It's probably going to be a couple months before you really get dialed in, maybe even longer. And I think, unfortunately, yeah, a lot of people think if I just had this tool, if I just had that tool, I mean, I've said this before, but like my shop is basic as fuck and I get a lot of great stuff done. Actually, Don Nguyen, I was psyched to see his shop because he's also got a basic as fuck shop. He just made a hilarious video where he's like, him and his shopmate Sam are going around and rating the different tools, and they're all this janky ass bullshit that they've put together to make it happen. But look at Don Nguyen's work, right? His work is fucking excellent, and it comes down to his skill and his ability to make the things that he has work for him. Of course he would love to upgrade to all kinds of tooling, right? I'm sure. But that's just not where he's at, right? And so he's making it happen with what he's got. I'm doing the same thing. I'm making it happen with what I got. But I have a very, very fucking basic setup. You know, I think this thing of accumulating tools, it is like this misconception of, oh, if I just get this tool, that's going to help really like help me accelerate and become a much better maker. You still have to know how to use that tool.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I don't know. It's just
to circle back with what we're doing with this 3 month, we're going to have this public relations firm with us for 3 months. It could be a disaster.
Sure.
It might not work. We're very well aware that it will work or it won't work.
Yeah.
And we're very aware that we have the budget that we can give it a try for 3 months, and we'll see. We may not see immediate. I think that that's the other thing is there's this idea where you buy this thing and then you buy this thing or invest in something that you're going to have an immediate reaction, and that's never the
How
case.
Measurable is the
right.
result? Yeah, yeah, mm. yeah.
Whoa, mm.
You said brick and mortar media. Does that mean like magazines and newspapers
yep.
and stuff?
Right. Magazines and newspapers, and that's what we're focusing them on. Magazines, newspapers, and you know, whatever. That not just not social media. I don't need, trust me, if we're working with a company, a social media or a public relations company, and they have less followers than we do, not to be a prick about it, but it's just like, you need my help. I don't need your
exactly.
help.
Exactly. If you can't do it for like, yourself.
I mean, goddamn, you got 400 followers, man. You know, I don't like paying you. You should be paying me.
Do you realize that your demographic is going to be like males between 20 to 40? Now, what magazines are these reading? You're just going to be in porn magazines, aren't you?
Maxim
oh,
magazine.
God, that is an outrage. Maxim,
if there's, still a thing, if there's still a thing, I don't know.
Yeah, is Maxim not around anymore?
I don't think so, dude.
Oh, shit, did I just age myself?
Yeah, you fucked yourself. But at the same time, it's just like getting what we're doing in other things is what we need to be.
Yeah, so. New audience. Yeah, yeah, you know. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Just before we keep going, Craig, is everything sounding okay? Or
it's okay. It's dropping in and out a lot, so I'm not hearing a lot of the conversation, but I'm piecing it together.
All right, look at you.
So if we're talking about getting new stuff, let's say we lived in Canada, where would you go, Jeff?
Oh, are you kidding me? Maritime Knife Supply. It's the one-stop shop for all your belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, heat-treating ovens, presses, all that stuff. And if you go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, you can deal with Lawrence Lake, and he's the distributor for Broadbeck. He's the distributor for Combat Abrasives. He's the distributor for the Damasteel Invitational Steel. He has all the I don't know how many he has left, but if you want to get involved with the knife steel build along, the knife making build along with Damasteel knife build along, go to Lawrence Lake or at MaritimeKnifeSupply.com and get yourself
smooth.
Oh, shut up, you mackerel, you. Stick it in your mackerel. Fine. So go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, and you can get yourself a 10-pack of abrasive belts. You get 10% off. So MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
There we go. Should we do a question or two, do you think?
If you want, whatever you want. I don't care.
Okay.
I mean, I care, but I don't really care.
Devin Sheridan contacted us on Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us your questions. Devin has done exactly that. He says, is there an easy way to refresh ceramic belts to get a bit more life out of them? Just squeeze that extra bit of juice out of the belts. Do you guys do anything?
Yeah, I got some.
Go ahead.
So for a long time, I was using these diamond tipped, like kind of pointed, but they're stone dressing wheel or stone dressing sticks that you can either use like on a bench grinder for a silicon carbide wheel or on a surface grinder in a certain kind of like block fixture to help true up the wheel so the corners are nice and sharp and everything. But actually it's not as good as it could be. And my friend Laramie Jackson, if you don't follow him already, he's a really great maker. He's a young dude down in Arizona. And I was thankful to see him again at Travis Wirtz Hammer, and he's a good guy. And I actually chatted with him on the phone the other day regarding this dressing stick that he sent, or he brought to me at the Hammer Inn, and they're on Amazon, and I'm actually just trying to pull up the page again, but they're basically like, they're a little T shape, and somehow they have diamond adhered to it or encrusted on the top of it. And And it fucking, it's like an inch and a half wide, almost 2 inches wide, and it's perfect for gently, lightly dressing the surface of the, or the surface of the belt, the face of the belt, nice and evenly. That was the difficult part with the stone dressing stick, is it came to a single point. And it would, if you're not like super smooth dragging it across, you can accidentally dig in, like if you have a Trizac structured abrasive belt or something like that. And you can accidentally dig into that, where this flat face is perfect for cleaning up evenly across the surface. And it, yeah, I love it. And I was using it on the Trizacs or structured abrasives. I was using it on coarse ceramics. I think once you get to probably 120, there's like a point of diminishing returns. On what it's doing, because once you get below that, the abrasive's so fine that you're probably just shearing it all off. But for your coarser belts, like your 36, your 40s, your 60s, 80s, all of it, so like from coarse up to probably about 120, maybe 100, it's going to benefit you greatly so that you can get more work out of your coarse grip belts. I will say though that, like when you have a fresh 36 and you can see like the topography of the belt is super fucking rough, right? Mm-hmm. As it wears down or glazes over at a certain point, and you try to break it down, you're getting down to where, if you're using this dressing stick, you're getting down to where the abrasive is a little bit more even across the surface of the belt, and it has, it's still a really coarse abrasive, but it has more of an even cutting appearance, like a 60 grit, or if it's a 60 grit and you're using that dressing stick again, it'll then have more of an even cutting appearance of like an 80 grit or 120 grit belt. But it does help to freshen up the belt much more efficiently than what I had been using previously. And there, I've heard all kinds of things like jam the end of an old file into it to help break up the abrasive. But what that, the abrasive is still cutting against that file and has the potential of glazing over, where this diamond is way harder than the ceramic and it is just crushing it down and opening up that abrasive to fresh abrasive. And it's fucking awesome. And it just takes half a second and it, you can get back in and working on those belts really quickly.
Yeah. To add to that, I'd say how you use the belts as well. So let's say, I mean, what I generally do is if I'm grinding bevels or edges, I'd use fresher belts. Those fresher belts I would then put aside, because then I'd use the sort of slightly worn belts for like profiling, that kind of thing. Because I find particularly if you're using a, let's say like an 80 or a 60 grit, if you just start profiling with a brand new belt, because you've got that hard sort of 90 degree edge, you just find you just get showered in all the abrasive. It just takes everything off immediately, because you've got those massive ridges, if you like. Whereas if it's a slightly worn belt, first of all, you don't get showered in the abrasive. You don't just scrap all that abrasive immediately. But also, you know, it's not critical what you're doing there. You know, so you don't necessarily have to have a brand new sharp belt to do profiling. So that's why. Like many other people, I've got, you know, slightly worn belts on one hook and other belts everywhere, and it does get a bit of a mess. But yeah, try not to just use one belt from beginning to end, then start a new belt beginning to end. Sort of rotate those belts slightly, because yeah, it's sort of a waste of a new belt if you're doing profiling with it, because you're just gonna spatter all that abrasive and waste it anyway.
Trizac, bitch.
There you go.
That was that's the only person who knows. Pat Quinn, when we were doing the classes, he I said, "Do you have any belts?" He's like, "Yeah, I got this. I got Trizac, bitch." And we just started saying Trizac, bitch, all the whole weekend. Trizac, bitch, just out of nowhere, just screaming Trizac, bitch.
That's so
funny. I'm all in on the Trizacs, by the way. I'm back with the Trizacs. Nice.
Yeah, I've always liked the concept of Trizacs. But they always seem to glaze over so quickly for me when I'm grinding blades. And I could never I still have like a bunch of old ones just laying around, because I'm just like, one day I'm going to figure out how to open up this abrasive. And this sanding stick, I actually just sent, or this dressing stick, I just sent a link to you guys. And I should post it on the Instagram actually too. But that dressing stick is that it totally opens it right back up, and you can get back to work really quickly, at least for like this what I'm grinding on. And but yeah.
I've been using the Trizax on a contact wheel slowly in order to get from the final grit to the Scotch-Brite to kind of like chill out some of the grind lines before we do a, if we do a belt finish for like a hollow grind and stuff like that, the Trizax, before you get to the Scotch-Brite wheels have been really, really made a big difference, made them more of a matte color or matte pattern than just going straight from like you know, high grit and something like that.
Well, and there's also just one more note on belts, and you kind of reminded me of this, is that aluminum oxide belts like to be used at a slower speed, and ceramic belts like to be used at a higher speed, and so that is also something to take into consideration when using these different belts and trying to get the most out of them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Craig, makes sense?
It does. And whilst we're talking abrasives, I mean, we all got to do some hand sanding as well. Let's not forget. Indata Rhinowet, if you're not using that, you're a mug. So head on over to texasfarrowsupply.com. Grab yourself some Indata Rhinowet and watch you there. Take a look at everything else they have. Everything you could possibly need. And we can get you 10% off. Use Knife Talk 10 at texasfarrowsupply.com. So fill up that cart with Indata Rhinowet. And yeah, you'll thank us for it, I'm sure.
We want to do another one?
Let's do a couple more, then head out, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I gotta go to the bathroom so bad as to make my head spin.
Oh, shit. Why don't you go while I read this one?
That's all right.
Okay.
All right, I'm gonna go. I'll be right back.
Yeah. Unless you're taking a shit.
I'm not right, taking a shit. I'm not. What do I look like, Craig? Oh, we're gonna stop everything. We're gonna stop everything. No, I'm not gonna take a shit.
All right,
you can time me. This is that. What is that? One guy said we can measure time with how fast someone goes to the bathroom. All right, I'll be right back.
All right, this next one's from Matthew Irvin. It says, I notice a lot of beginner blacksmiths being told to practice fundamentals by making a large number of small things like leaves and S hooks. Is there a knife making equivalent to this? Do you have any thoughts, Craig?
No, but what I do see is a lot of people, when they start making knives, they all make something very, very similar. And I think that's due to maybe the tools that they've got. So you see that sort of that 2-inch sort of radius that people use a lot, you know, until they develop their own sort of style, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any sort of basic beginner knife that anybody would start with. No. And in fact, most people probably do the complete opposite of what you should do, because they think, oh, I'll make myself a big old chef knife for myself. This would be a great starter.
No.
And obviously, that's not the case. I don't think there's any pattern of what people start making. No. I mean, when I had one blacksmith's lesson, I suppose, and we made a blacksmith's knife.
With Alex Pohl, right?
With Alex Pohl, yeah, and we made like a blacksmith's knife, which I suppose is probably, you know, a starter knife for many people who are forging. No, I don't think there's any, you know, there's no obvious progression. Start with this, then do that. I don't think that really happens.
He's back. Jeff is back.
All the time. I wash my hands too.
Ooh,
fancy.
Not just this time, every time. That's what happens. People are like, oh, you probably didn't even wash his hands. I always wash my hands, motherfucker.
Good for you. Well done. Yeah. Got a cookie?
I would say that, especially when it comes to like beginner techniques for practicing bladesmithing, I honestly, like, especially when it's colder in the shop, I struggle with motivation because it's fucking freezing and standing at the grinder is not the most motivating thing. But if I start my day with forging, then that helps kind of get the blood flowing, helps keep me warm, and I can get moving also, just because I'm already have that kind of momentum from the forging that helps me lead into the rest of the day. And when I do forge, I'm just forging little dinky kind of whatever knives out of probably like 1-inch wide stock that's maybe a 1/4-inch thick and whatever, 3 or 4 inches long. And I'm just forging these little like brute to forge, what I call brute to forge bench knives. But what's really great about practicing those or forging those is it you practice forging in a tip, which is tricky, and you also practice pulling down a heel on the knife. Or, you know, I actually start by recessing kind of the ricasso area and then pulling down the heel. And then you have to use your straight peen or the edge of your hammer to draw out the length of the material and taper it out. And then you have to use your cross peen to pull down the width or create the width in the blade. And it's just basic fundamentals for blade forging that I think is a great thing to practice. Honestly, I even when it's not cold, if I'm feeling stuck in the shop, I'll take 20 minutes, 30 minutes to forge out one of these things to kind of get that momentum going and that self-motivation, self-confidence kind of built up for myself before I carry that into other activities in the shop. And so, but I'd be curious what Jeff has to say about small things like leaves and S-hooks that knife makers can do to practice their forging.
I know exactly what I would say. And one of the things is figure out why you guys are getting fish lips. You dorks are getting fish lips all the time, and you don't know why. And I know why. And it's because part of it is because when a lot of you guys don't understand that it isn't just taking a piece of steel and sticking it in the forge and then hitting it hard. That's bullshit. It's kind of understanding what's happening. And then what's happening is you have to see your hammer like a pebble where you throw the pebble in the water. And how the pebble hits the water, those ripples are what happens when you throw a pebble in the water. Well, the hammer is the same thing. You have a slightly crowned face, and that point that's touching the first, everything moves around it, and then you get a ripple. And what happens is when you're too close to the edge of your steel, that there's nowhere for that ripple to go except for outwards, and then the top and the bottom meet, and you get the fish lips. That is the dumbest thing that I think you have to understand why it's happening, and then you have to be able to notice it, and instead of saying, well, I got to grind that off, understand why it's happening and don't let it happen again. Mm-hmm. I think that there's forging. The funny thing is like bladesmithing, the forging part is such a tiny percentage of the knife making process. Yeah. But the fact remains is that there's so many forging fundamentals that knife makers need, and they just kind of like bully through it, and they just forget, glaze over it. And I think that there's so many more fundamental things in the forging in and of itself that bladesmiths can aspire to. And it's always the why is this happening? How come when I pull a heel down, it's so thin at the end? And I can't, it's too thin to grind everything away. And I'm just pulling it. Hopefully it's going to get bigger, but then it becomes like a razor blade and it's unusable. Figuring out these things, that's the biggest issue. But the fish lips should not happen if you're forging a knife. Shouldn't happen.
Well, and honestly, I would add too, which I think you might agree with, that practicing blacksmithing skills like forging tapers, forging S-hooks, forging leaves, these are all great techniques and practices for understanding how to manage material and understand how the material is going to move. Like you're saying, like, why is something happening? And so by practicing, even if you don't want to use say you don't want to use like your good cutlery steel, get a half inch by half inch square bar of mild and just fucking practice forging shit out of that. And that will help you with your material management and understand material flow and what happens when you hit one way or the other and use different peens, straight peens, cross peen, anal peen, whatever. And even the difference.
Did you say anal peen?
Angle peen.
Oh, okay. I thought I could have sworn you said.
That's the wrong hammer.
Try that old anal peen. I'm like, whoa, Neek. Blade maker, your mom's not listening. I hope that one.
So, yeah, I think even just. But practicing blacksmithing skills, I've been doing all these little kind of screw off little bench knives. And I actually want to start getting into practicing tong forging because one, I could definitely use some better tongs, but two, I want to just be more efficient at that and to have that flexibility to make tongs because I probably have at least six different pairs of tongs that I wish I had to help with my forging. just so I can securely hold on to things, but I don't have them. So I need to learn how to forge tongs, which unfortunately I did one forging, like little micro forging clinic with Salem Straub when I was in Montana last year. But I need to do more of it. And it's a good practice.
Two little things that as a knife maker you should practice. Number one is when you're hitting with a hammer on the anvil, focus the hammer on one spot on the anvil and move the knife around that one spot. The slapping around all over the place is not correct. What you should be doing is you focus your hammer on one spot on the anvil, put a little X there, and you're going down, up and down as if it was a power hammer, and then you're moving your knife around, and then you're drawing it back, and you're drawing it forward, you're drawing it back. This slapping around is crazy, and one of the ways you can avoid getting fish lips on a bar of steel where the end is a rectangle or a square is you forge 45 degrees down and forge down one of the corners, and then automatically you end up with a fucking point. The bottom corner is your point. That's it. We've said enough.
We did it.
Let's get the fuck out of here. We've said enough, Craig. We've said enough.
Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.